elevate.
Okay, guys, welcome to episode number 16 of the Elevate Podcast with me, Noel Smith, and with my friend who just messes up every intro, Seamus Fox.
Seamus Fox.
Today on the podcast, we have Christy Doherty. Christy Doherty is a good friend of ours. He is what you would describe as being an entrepreneur and an expert in sales. And as I say, he's helped us a long way with Elevate in terms of our sales experience and what we teach to our clients. And he's actually going to do a seminar for us very soon, which is amazing. But I'll let Christy introduce himself and tell us exactly what he's all about.
Go ahead, Christy.
Thank you, guys, and to all the listeners. Well, thanks for having me. And it was quite a hard act to follow. I listened to the last presentation. Gary Rutherford? And I was thinking, crikey. Yeah. Bit of pressure here. I thought it was a really good podcast to listen to. This is slightly different because it's more upbeat and it's more about sales. And hopefully the listeners get a bit of value and some insights about sales and how it can help their business, their self-employment, whether they're working on self-employed or as part of a company. But for me, I guess I'm known locally for my work with Oak Leaf Boxing, which is unfortunate because every time I go out, all the people seem to talk about
boxing.
Is boxing. but I'm also sickening people on Facebook by putting in pictures of me checking in hotels, foreign cities around the world. And that all comes with my sales role, I guess. Currently, I'm the vice president of Monsieur's, which is a global software company. We started the company, me and Liam Walsh from Derry, about 15 years ago, alongside a US investor. And in 10 years, we've taken that company to about 60 different countries. We're billing annual recurring revenue well into the millions of dollars. Before that, we were working in overseas property. I was living in Italy, working with Barclays Bank. Again, full sales role, selling to international buyers, investors, landowners, hotel owners, etc. So a real long 15-year track record in sales and overachieving in sales. And I don't say that to impress you guys or the listeners here, but it's more to sort of impress upon you that with a right mindset and a positive attitude towards sales and a really good, strong self-concept of yourself, you can achieve anything. And sales is the perfect platform for taking a strong personal development mindset, goals mindset and growth mindset to achieving. I mean, take a step back 15 years ago, I was standing in Seagate as a production operator, going, what the fuck am I doing with my life? and that's just being honest. And I'll probably get to the backstory in a wee bit and touch on it, how I got involved in sales. But fast forward 15 years, as you said, I'm an entrepreneur. I guess I've invested in a number of businesses. Most recently, Station B&B, which is a new luxury 15-bed B&B here in the city. It was designed to be an owner investor, not touch it, not get involved, use our hospitality technology expertise and 15 years in it, they bring this product to market. But being a sales guy, we're in there every day, changing strategy, changing online, how we manage our bookings, how we manage our OTAs, who we go and we're doing corporate deals. We're now exceeding our daily revenue, our annual revenue, our monthly revenue targets, and it's all down to sales and having the right mindset and the sort of plan and goal setting as well. And hopefully over the course of this 30, 45 minutes, we can touch on all the different points about sales and how important the mindset is and how anybody can achieve what we've achieved.
So for yourself, Christy, like as you say, you were 15 years ago, you were in Seagate. So kind of where did you start out? Like when you go back in terms of, like there wouldn't have been a lot of sales training around there for a lot of people to do maybe what you're doing now. So what was your first lead, basically, and they going down that avenue or down that route that you're doing?
That's a good question. And you're right, there is no real sales training. People from Derry, people say you get the gift of the gab. And that's how this really started. I remember very well, funny enough, I was sitting, and again, hopefully you'll be listening in due course. I was with Gary Gillespie. I don't know if you or any of your listeners know Gary. And we were having a beer in Jackie Mullins, and Gary said, you know what? I think you'd be brilliant at sales. I think you'd be good at sales. He had a sales company or an insurance company. He was a manager. I'm working in Seagate doing night shifts, standing on it. Now, I'd got a few promotions in Seagate, so I was no longer an operator. But I think sales is the next thing that I wanted to get into. And cutting a long story short, I went out with Gary. And we were knocking doors all around Donegal.
Yeah.
And every door was, no, you're not interested, not interested. And halfway through it, I was thinking, this is definitely isn't for fucking me. He can stick his sales job. And then all of a sudden, somebody took a bite, right? Yeah. Some man brought us into their house. Me and Gary went down. Within 15 minutes, Gary was a master, master. Learned a few things that night. The two things I learned. The first is persistence.
Yeah.
He did not give up. This is a Friday night. It's getting close to 9 o'clock. And in my head, 9 o'clock cut off. Yeah. Gary, it's not. You go to somebody, we get a sale. And I was already thinking, this isn't for me. Thanks for the opportunity. Back to work on Monday morning. Life is easier that way.
Yeah.
Next thing, Gary gets a sale. 15 minutes, bish, bash, bosh. Christy, you sign that application form. We got under the car, so it was on my name.
Yeah.
First night out, got a sale. Gary just goes, well done. You shook my hand. You just made yourself 500 quid. He split the commission. It was £1,000 deal. And I'm thinking, whoa, 500 quid. I was earning £1,500 a month for 4 weeks work at Seagate.
Yeah.
And then that's when the bug hit on. Right, now I get it. I just made 4 hours out. But the other thing I learned that night, which was critically important to the success that we had in sales, and this goes out to the listeners as well, and if you can apply this little strategy, I got under the car and said, right, let's go. Jackie Mullins, 500 quid on the bike, Friday night, rocking. Gary go, no. It's freaking 9:15 at this stage in Isle of Doe, and I don't know if anybody knows where it is, but it is in the back arse of nowhere. Gary said, no, it doesn't work like that. We're on a roll. Let's go. Up to this guy up here, drove in his car to the next available house. And what I learned from that is this. The best time to make a sale is when you get a sale.
Yeah.
Because you are pumped with energy. You are pumped with drive.
Mm.
And the next door we knocked, the guy didn't. He was heading out for the Friday night. He didn't buy, but he said, come back tomorrow.
Mm.
Come back tomorrow and you know, I'll talk to you guys. I'm just heading out. You're doing some machinist down the street. Great. Mm. Fantastic. I'll sign up as well.
Yeah.
So it just showed me two things. Persistence, never give up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you get the taste for it, the hunger, because it's the greatest profession in the world when you get a sale. There's no buzz like it. It's a high. And then second, when you get a sale, that's the best time to make the second sale.
Yeah.
And just keep at it and keep at it and keep at it.
I suppose that's a point where, as you say, and you touched on it in terms of, it's nearly like the psychology in dairy, knowing the culture. If you are trying to sell something, look at him. He's just interested in money and it's this and that and the other. Yeah. And this is where a lot of businesses fail because they're afraid to sell.
Yeah.
They're afraid to ask for what they know they should be asking for.
Yeah.
And businesses collapse because of it. Like.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, everything that everybody does is sales.
Yeah.
You're all in sales. Like, and like you just touched on it in that terms of persistence. Mm. But that's kind of where a lot of people fall short. Do you agree? Like, for sales, people get the no and then they'll give up.
Yeah.
They take it personal.
The Colonel Sanders thing, it always reminds me of the 1,009 times he was declined before he got his first buyer for his special recipe chicken.
He was sleeping in his car.
That's it. And he wasn't young either. But you imagine like what he would feel like after 30 no's. I keep thinking, what does he feel like after 40, 50? 1,000.
Yeah.
1,000 no's.
Yeah, 1,000.
Like, when was this man going to stop?
Uh-huh.
He fucking wasn't. Nah. He was going to keep going, and he did. Once he got the first one, as you said, I'm sure he rolled them out after that. Like.
Yeah.
And I suppose there's that proof of the pudding, like, okay, this works, right? If you got a yes, you're like, you know, people are buying this.
Mm.
So therefore, I have the motivation to go on and say,
yeah,
this is good. You start believing in the product more, and you start believing in yourself more, and then it shows.
Yeah.
And obviously, it shows to the next customer because they buy off you.
Yeah. We were a totally different animal, me and Gary, when we knocked that second door, the door that bought.
Mm.
The door that, after getting the sale and going through the paperwork and the buzz and the energy, my head was down. I'm thinking, this ain't just get me back home.
Of course.
I could be in Jackie Mullins back in the heyday at 10 o'clock at this rate. Come on, Gary. Get the sale, two different animals.
Aye.
Unstoppable force of energy and just high and excited. And the customer felt that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're getting rejected and rejected and rejected. We had no fear. We were confident. You need to see us. But the other thing as well, you know, as you said there, people have a fear of selling, and people, I've worked with people that have got no, and then they just, this isn't for me. I'm not good at sales. I'm no good at sales.
Mm.
And they give up very, very early on.
Mm.
And they don't, and sometimes it comes down to, let's call it a positive self-image of themselves, how they see themselves. And the more you tell yourself, I can't do sales, you guess what's going to happen? You can't do fucking sales. The more you tell yourself you can do sales and bombard your self-conscious mind, and maybe even, and hopefully there'll be a bit of mindset will come through in this, because if you're in sales, you have to have a positive mindset.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're in boxing, you have to have a positive mind. If you're in sports, high performance sales, you have to have that positive mindset.
Mm.
And there's a lot of people that don't, and at the first sign of a rejection, they take it too personal.
Aye, and they stop.
And they stop. Yeah. Ultimately, they stop.
Aye, that's like that 3 feet before gold in that book, Think and Grow Rich, where they took it back, the guy, like way back in the early 1900s, and they were kind of, but they were digging for gold. And they were digging and digging and digging and digging and digging for so long. And then they gave up and they stopped. And what happened was they took the stuff that they were using, all the equipment
machinery,
and stuff, the machinery, they like an old garbage man.
Junk man.
Like a junk man. But the boy didn't take the junk and obviously dispose of it.
No, he
went back to where the thing was and he digged and it was 3 feet.
Three feet more.
The vein.
And they had the vein, the gold, and that guy ended up.
But it's a good story because that guy, what he learned from that after selling his frigging machinery to a junk man who wasn't in the.
He went on the sales?
He actually became a life insurance. He found out that the junk man sold the junk or sold the machinery and then hired an engineer to plot the chart of, right, well, they stopped digging here. There was gold over there, so it must be somewhere around here. The engineer plotted the route and goes, right, it's 3 foot over here. They found the vein, but the guy became a multimillionaire and the rest is history. But the guy Darby, who was the guy that sold the equipment, the original, he then developed a mindset, never, ever, ever give up now, never quit, no matter what. And then he became the richest insurance salesman in North America.
That's right.
By never giving up.
And that's from your failures, like, he learned something from the book.
It also says the great quote that I remember printing out and sticking on my mirror when I was living in Italy, because it was a hard old station. I was on a really... a new sales environment, the best of the best were down there. The greatest mentor I ever had, Harry Fitzsimmons, was there, and I was learning very quickly. It was cutthroat industry, Wolf of Wall Street,
selling houses,
selling property. But then I was brought on to do finance and stuff. But the quote from that Derby, with every adversity grows the seed of an equivalent success, and that kind of stuck by me in sales. You might have highs and lows, or in business, because I had a children's clothes shop, a business in the Richmond Centre, Little Rogues, Burberry, Dior, all these brands, and it went tits up after about 18 months, 2 years, and you could have given up then, but you just say, right, you know, you might have a bad period after it, but it was more then, right, dust ourselves down, let's see what we can do, let's put this right, and you know.
At the end of the day, I suppose that comes down, and like going back to even that book, it's about desire, and what you believe, and what your goal is, and what your vision is, and what you want to achieve in life. And if you don't even have that path clear, then you're always going to fall down at the first hurdle, basically. But the guys that do never give up and they do keep approaching things is because they have that real desire, that real goal. And it's not like it's something that's going to stop them. It's just a hurdle. It's an obstacle. And they know they're going to get around it. They're going to get over it or whatever.
When people ask me about what's made you successful at Monte Airs, for example, or what was so successful in Italy, or what was the overriding factor? Why certain PTs doing so well, or why certain small business versus... And it's, as he said, it's goals. The people that plan, you wouldn't believe the many salespeople that have reported to me over the years. And the first thing I would say to them, what's your goals? You know, when they start, what's your goal? What's your say? Have you a sales plan for the territory you're going to take over? What's your personal development plan for the year? A lot of them don't even have it.
Mm.
See, when you're a sales guy, whether you're a self-employed sales guy and you're not employing, or you work for a company, large or small, or a startup, which we work for, you have to have, you're the CEO of yourself.
Of course.
Noel Smith Limited.
Mm.
You're the CEO of Noel. You're the CEO of Seamus Fox. I work for a company, draw a salary, we've got our own business, etc. But I'm a CEO of me, and you have to have that approach.
Yeah.
What do CEOs do? They strategize, they plan, they map out, they goal set, and they do everything as coordinated, and it's very strategic. It's amazing how many people they think sales, which is probably one of the greatest professions and highest paid professions in the world, just think you can wing it, and you've got he's going to be good because he can talk, but that's bullshit.
No.
Exactly,
it's utter bullshit. It's a skill, and it's unfortunate the problem with sales, they don't teach it. You don't do an MBA in sales, you don't do a BA in sales. It's all the other functions of running a business, the marketing, IT, the ops, and all that shit that comes together.
Shit.
But you ask any CEO, and I'll give you a story about one, or any business owner or franchisee or whatever, you know, and so even public CEOs, I've been speaking to some hotel CEOs, and they say in public, you know, it's all about customer service and improving our brand and our guest experience at our hotels and all that. When that door closes, nobody's listening. They go, it's all sales.
Of course.
It's fucking revenue. Sales. I need sales. It's money, revenue. What they say in public is very different to what the reality is.
Well, that is a dirty word.
If you've nobody coming in, customer service doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
But you see, it is a dirty word. And you kind of talked about it. You touched upon it. That money is essentially like the root of all evil. Back to that one. That you're taught growing up that money's basically bad. Sales is bad.
Yeah,
yeah. And sales people are bad.
Yeah.
And if they're trying to push, like if they're trying to push a product on you that you don't want.
Yeah.
But obviously that's not the case. And if you start viewing it, the product, as being something that you're pushing on someone, then you're going to be a really bad salesperson.
Well, exactly. And what Harry said to me when we were down in Italy and talking about sales, and he was a CEO, we're making 6-7 million a month, right? That's the sort of revenue. He was making. I was not making.
I was going to hit you for a sub there for a
day. Hit myself for a sub. I started to believe my own story. Yeah, but that's the sort of money. But when I went down and I got interviewed and got asked to come in and work with a sales team and help do. Well, what his words to me was, sales is the spark. You see all these people out in the office and they were all working away, and that's the marketing team over there, and that's the IT, and that's this guy. And then the room out the back's the sales guys. They have their own room because I want them standing at their chairs. I don't want them sitting. It's body language. They're more energy when they're standing.
Yeah, right,
if they get a sale, they can sit down that day. That was you know. But he said,
that's,
you know,
it
was brilliant. And hey, if he came in the room and somebody was sitting down, he came over and patted him, well done, how much money did you make me today? I didn't. You got a slap behind the ear and get out. And that's the way it was. You know, this is a 65-year-old West Belfast man. You know, pure West Belfast man. He still owns taxi. So he was, you know, straight old school guy. Like, but what he did say about sales was, when he described it, that's the market and that's this and that's that, and that's the sales. We keep them out there because that's the spark plug and the engine of this business, that sales team.
Exactly.
And that's the spark plug. Without them, none of these people get paid.
Aye.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
The investors don't get paid. Nothing gets, if these guys aren't selling, nothing happens in this organization. And it's the same for every other organization. Yeah. I don't care what anybody says.
I think the thing is, again, at the end of the day, it's a sale. You're not trying to give somebody something that's not going to be of use to them.
No,
it's an ethical sale. Like, if you're doing it unethically, then you're going to run into the bother.
That's
where
story.
There's issues for sure.
Yeah.
Like, but
we'll do a different podcast, not one.
But by Gary Glassman.
But that's the thing. Like, I know at the end of the day, any unethical thing that you're trying to push in sale is going to come back on you. But if you believe in your product and you know that that product can help somebody,
100%.
Then what is the issue with selling it?
That's a brilliant point, and I agree with it. And the thing is, sales too, people can't give sales guys a bad
rep.
I know me and Gary used to go out and we were selling, but we generally did. When we called into somebody's house, taking it back to the old school days, you know, we usually ask a simple question to people. And if they, you know, it's like the husband, Seamus, if we walked in and you and Emma and your daughter was sitting there, you know, and the guy's a nice house and there's a car there, and it turns out he hasn't got any life insurance. But, you know, we're saying, you know, do you feel responsible in providing for your family in the event of something happening to you?
Yeah.
Nobody's going to say no.
No.
Do you know what I mean? And they might have thought it was an unethical way of positioning it, but we were getting, but think about it, if your aunt or we were selling income protection, it was the same. If you have an accident down in Dublin, you're only two paychecks away from losing the house, being homeless. And that's actually very true in Ireland now at this minute in time. So we had people's interest, and if they said, no, I'm not interested, or I've got life insurance, we walked away. And it's the same now, selling anything, no matter what it is. Bearing in mind the PTs that might be listening, or any small business, people don't give a shit about your service, you know. And people sometimes say, well, we do this and we do that, and it's what's in it for them.
Yeah, of course.
It's what's in it for them. And if you're aligned to what's in it for them,
then
that's a different story.
They want, like a PT or like any type of business, they want the result. At the end of the day, like when you're talking about life insurance, obviously what's in it for them, they have to be benefiting from something.
I think if you're not in selling like a service like fitness or life insurance, you've got to be bringing some tangible benefit. Where we're selling now in the business world, it has to have an ROI. If I didn't believe in a product, we wouldn't be selling it.
No.
It's just as simple. So when you're dealing with a big enterprise, what is the return on investment? What is this going to do for me or the business? Or can this elevate my career if I spend £1 million a year with you guys?
It's like Noel said to me, when we start selling fat burning belts, and I was like, no, no, I can't do that.
Why? Raps, even just the raps. Skinny coffee. Noel Smith skinny coffee.
So that was the spark for you then, catching up with Gary, I suppose, and getting into sales.
Gary got me into sales, in fairness. And then the bit that, when I also remember seeing Gary get chased out of a place, me and Gary were chased out, and I was telling someone else, Raymond Bradley, who was one of the managers of the company, Gary's power of dealing with objections. Some of them I don't really, I was young and learning it, I guess. But Raymond Bradley was the boy then. This is about to change it. I went and learned the rough and ready with Gary and how to position yourself and just the banter and and he was a brilliant manager. Then Raymond Bradley handed me the book, Think and Grow Rich. And I was heading on to Seagate that night, and he said, take a month off, you just got paid £1,000 to add your, and just, you know, you had two sales in there. Read that book and come back to us and tell me if you're still worried about objections. And I said, take a month to read it. And I wasn't back in, I wasn't really reading books a lot, you know what I mean? I read the book, I opened the book, and I think it was at a Friday, Saturday, Sunday night shift. I was phoning Raymond Bradley on the Monday morning, I'm ready. I've got the goals written out, I've my definite purpose written out, I've got my affirmations done, boom, give me the rest is history. And I think it was that book, more so than working with Gary, gave me the opportunity and the platform and seeing how a good master sales guy opens and closes. I guess I went in a different direction then, bringing in property, and then, but it's been a life, and sales, the most important thing in sales in any business, it has to be lifelong learning. Sales isn't just you learn with one guy and then what we were selling 15, 20 years ago wouldn't even work now, per se. It changes like everything.
Of course.
The end user is so well educated. There's so many competitors, if you see them as competitors, and it's just the people are so well educated, you have to be super focused.
And on the ball.
On the ball. Strategies, selling strategies, questions, positioning, everything has changed.
Even right down to, I suppose, like different systems that you're using and technology. Like.
Technology has brought a lot on, automated a lot of stuff.
You obviously travel a lot now, Chrissy. You're just back from London from an expo over there in sales and marketing. Like, you obviously get a lot from books as well. So, it's, I guess what you're saying is right. You're living up to that. You're constantly re-educating yourself on possibly what's the best strategies for sales out there. Is there anything that you would recommend to maybe small businesses starting out? I know we have a seminar coming up, by the way, so we'll talk a wee bit about that. But is there anything, even like fundamentals that they might want to do, or just resources that they can look at to help them with sales?
As you say, there's a seminar. I think there's so much they talk about the fundamentals and principles of selling, from strategies. First and foremost, though, and I've said it to everybody that's worked with us, and we've taken weak salespeople. Farmers, a farmer in sales is somebody that likes to look after the account and can't really, you know, a brilliant account manager to people then, and turning that farmer into a hunter, giving them a gun and go find business. And there's two different types of, but the number one thing and principle of selling, as it goes back to the mindset, but it's the reprogramming of the self-image. How do they see themselves? Do you see yourself as a salesperson? Because see, if you don't, your customer's going to see that you're not.
Of course.
No. And that comes across subconsciously to your customer. So the number one thing is reprogramming the mind. A soldier sees himself as a soldier. A pilot sees himself as a pilot. A doctor sees himself as a doctor. That's what they wanted to do all their life. And they're continually training and fine-tuning their skills and upgrading their skills. Sales is no different. It's the greatest profession in the world when you do it right. And you got to keep working at it. And then that's the number one. And then there's all sorts of different strategies then, sales strategies, they sell the different, so there's...
It's going to change again. Well, they say that sales doesn't change. At the end of the day, a good salesman will sell you any product. But I suppose there's going to be different types of strategies. There's going to be different types of ways that you can sell different types of products. So, of course, it's going to change across the board. Like, you can't really just say, right, this is what you do to sell anything.
You see,
it has to change.
See the workshop that I've held with our own company, because we have 5-10 different products selling. One product's fitted to a budget hotel. The other product goes to a luxury. There's a big difference. One product's signage, one product's mobility, one product's space for the guests, one's for the staff, one's in room, one's in the lobby. So when we sit down, and what we try to do is engineer the best selling strategy for that product to the end user. So we have an app buyer, I created the document called the buyer's matrix, the profile of that buyer. So you really then align who that buyer is, where his pain is, what he hopes to achieve, what that guy looks like, what his skills, is it marketing, is it IT, is it operating, and then aligning the product value proposition to that buyer, and then you do it over here. So we've done our own internal workshops, and it's probably something you could do with a team of people in a webinar. Let's call it the workbooks are all there. How they map it out and plan it out. But if this guy's a PT and this guy's a small business owner owns a coffee shop, or this guy is doing sales for insurance company, whatever it is, it's all going to be different.
Yeah,
the language is different, but there's spun selling, snap selling, vision selling, consultative selling, challenger sale, insight selling. There's so many different concepts and ways to sell. And then there's getting down. But one thing that we'll all agree on is the psychology of sales.
Yeah.
And Brian Tracy, the author, has a load of really, really, really good books on the psychology of sales that you can sort of, once you line up what sort of strategy is going to work for that particular business and how you can go about it. And it's unbelievable many people then. What we try to coax out of the people that work for us in Montiers and even down in Italy, they knew the answers all along. They knew, it's only when you sit them down in a room and start talking and map out, give them a template and say, right, let's have it. They leave the room buzzed up and go, how did I not know that? How did I not see that? Nothing more rewarding. You get an email or a phone call 6 weeks later and go, I just smashed my Q1 numbers or smashed my Q2 numbers. And it was all just, to me, it's really, really simple stuff. But it's just showing people how to put belief. The framework. It's a process too. And then the belief, the mindset, because people can walk out. What I've often found as well, the most positive people, the most talkative guy in the room and the guy that's making the jokes and the cracking, he's a guy that's probably not got the best concept of himself as a sales guy, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And it could be the sort of shy and sort of quiet one that didn't speak that openly in the room and wasn't as engaged.
That was really good.
Who goes away and goes, because they've got a really, they've taken all everything you've said on, and then they've got a really positive self-image of themselves. They do all the sort of mindset stuff, which is super important while you're in sales or small business or fighting or whatever it might be, boxing, should I say. And they go and be a success.
Yeah. So fair, like even in that course that we... that I was doing, and Bob Proctor talks about on it, where he was talking about like the difference between like CEOs and big companies in America and all of the states. They were getting guys within the company to go and shadow and work along with like the top sales guys to see how they operate, to see what it is they're that they're doing. But it's not necessarily what it is that they're doing, it's how they think. It's the basically what you touched on in terms of their subconscious and who they think they are, and they operate on a different platform completely. It's why that they're doing all the high sales, it's why that they're doing all that, because first they believe that they are that person and they have that type of psychology to be able to go and do that. And it's sometimes there are people that are either born with and they have that type of environment that they grew up in, or else sometimes people do the work to actually change it, and they go and get it.
That's with anything, isn't it, really? To be a high achiever in anything, you've got to have that belief. Well, let's get back to even the bare bones of it. See, what sales scripts, like, would you recommend them, or would it be something that you have in your own business? And I know you've said there's so many different ways of selling, so many different platforms as well to sell on. Like, would you have something set down as a plan?
I firmly believe in plans, right? I've created plans, pre-meeting worksheets, sales meeting worksheets. And I think it's more important to get the right questions. Tech sales is like... mastermind, you know what I mean? When you're speaking, you're sitting in a dark room, you and the customer. When your customer's speaking, the light's on them. When you're speaking, the light's on you. Who should the light be on more times than enough? The customer. Don't leave them in the dark. And I think that's what we try to get across. Ask questions, get them to talk. Scripts, right? If somebody joined, like I'm onboarding a guy next week in Manchester. He's joined our company as a junior sales guy. And there'll be scripts on that there just so he learns the ropes. He's not going to be exposed to any high net clients or key accounts, tier one accounts. But I have a script, and a script's just to sort of gauge you.
A flow.
I think masterminding out sometimes as well, just a... you know, here's our value proposition, here's the customer, and then just spider out the sort of key things that you want to get across. Scripts, if you're selling over the phone and you're selling a financial service product, potentially a script's good because there's compliance there. But I think the best, I wouldn't hire an enterprise sales guy, for example. Enterprise meaning selling in the, you know, a Hilton hotel chain. And if he then said, well, where's my script? You know, can we go, whoa, you're freaking hell. No, that's what did your CV say? Where did you work before? It's just not. So scripts for sales development reps, people that are maybe working on sort of lower entry, I think they're essential, and they're a good way of learning.
training, kind but of like training wheels. They're
it's
like
more training, and getting your. I mean, when I started with the insurance, and then when I was doing overseas property, and then I was doing mortgages, I kind of ripped my own sort of script and read it that many times in front of a mirror that it kind of just rolled off. And I've seen people I've been sold to by script, and I can tell this is a script. This guy's just running through a script. Aye. The good way to catch a script person is to ask them a question ask back. It just question. Throws them completely off the fucking. Aye. You know what I mean? And you can stutter. You may even hear paper shuffling in the background.
That's not on the script.
That's not on the script. Did you
see you next time? See you next time. O2 rings me. Okay, he'll be asking. So what's the capital of Madagascar?
You can really mess people up. I've been there and I've done it. And we ran a call centre here in Derry. We're doing debt management and we're getting leads. And there was kind of script based, but we moved away from it. But you can, scripts do serve a purpose. I think proper planning of a sales meeting and knowing who your customer is probably more important than scripts. But there's a place for scripts for sure.
Cool. So where would you say the turning point for you was in your career? Turning from being, you know, I know you spoke about Napoleon Hill book being a big one, but where would you say, and I know you spoke about Harry as well, and I would say that's probably where it might have been, but the turning point where you said, right, I'm a good salesman, the gift of the gab, have a few scripts going, where it just became, this is turning into something massive now, this is really going, and I feel like a salesman, I feel like I can really push this, because obviously you're an expert in your field now, and that's why we've brought you on, and that's why we have you and with us in Elevate. Like, but where would you say was the biggest kind of
I'll take that somewhere hidden in there. Well, maybe not hidden. There's a compliment there. But I think in sales as well, you're still striving to grow. And I'm sure you as a PT and a coach and a business owner, you constantly feel you're not there yet. There's more to go. And who am I? I'm 15, 20 years in sales. 16, 17 years in sales. So it changes. So there's still more growth to get the elite. And I think it's to be elite, it's just practice and learning and learning. Just the same in any sport or any field. Elite to the elite go the extra mile. They're the first. They add extra hours to their day. They get up early. They follow a routine. They have a plan. But I think when we were very, you know, it was a startup atmosphere. We were selling into global brands. We were selling into hotels to start with. I learned a lot from the Harrys and the Cleon Rowans, the CEOs, Gary's as a sales manager. I worked for a few CEOs. They were all sales guys. Great to have a CEO as a sales guy and not an IT guy. My current CEO is a phenomenal sales guy too. An introverted kind of sales guy, but brilliant sales guy. So very lucky. But when we took from selling into individual hotels and said, let's take a step up here. Me and Liam. And Liam was a great mentor as well. Little did he know it, we were bouncing off each other. He's a left brain engineer, sales guy.
Seamus says that about me.
And I'm a right brain. Seamus shuffles uncomfortably in the chair.
He doesn't say it out loud.
Raises his eyebrows.
Raises his eyebrows.
He doesn't say it out loud, but I know he's saying it internally.
But I think it was making a decision, right, we sort of cracked this code down here at these smaller chains and stuff, and we were, what about challenging a bigger hotel brand? And there's a hotel brand, probably the most innovative in the world now, Accor Hotels. Not a lot of people know them. They own 5,000 hotels, all your Ibis hotels, all your Novotel, all your Sofitels, Fairmont, all the luxury brands, they're all owned by Accor. We made a decision, let's go after a VP of sales, a VP of technology. Who are we, two boys from Ireland running around, you know, we're only 18 months old as a software company in a very highly competitive environment. Our competitors, in one particular, two deals, Liam was running one, I was running the other, and this is how I knew we've got something special here. He was up against Google, right, in his deal, and I was up against a company called Oracle. Well, some people know Oracle Lab, some people don't. Oracle, but they owned I was chasing a Travelodge deal. Liam was chasing with a car and IHG. Long story short, without getting under it, we'd sort of planned it. We planned our story. We know it's us and Oracle here. We know it's us and Google there. How can we? What differentiate? And we did a lot of planning, a lot of research. Planning our questions, ripping them up, starting again, ripping them up, starting again. Goal setting, visualization, believe it or not, bombarding our subconscious minds as well about, you know, we're winning this deal. We're, you know, we went away and done our own thing. Long story short, he got that deal, I got the Travelodge deal, and we beat off the David and Goliath in two different spheres. And that's when you kind of say, right, yeah. something special here. Mm-hmm. It's not just the gift of the gab, or it's not just Irish charm or local Irish. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of planning. There was a mental game. There was a mindset. There was a planning. There was a belief, an unwavering belief that we're going to want it. Mm. There's people in the company, possibly the CEO, kind of going, you guys are crazy. What? We have to spin up all this resource to build this. Are you sure you want to take this on? Your game, but we took it on.
Aye.
We took it on. We had every confidence we would get it as well. And we got it, long story short. And that's when you kind of know.
You got it. You got the seal, but what did you then? Shit yourself, probably. Hulk, we have these two massive hotels.
Not my problem anymore. You fix
it. Sold.
It's sold. On to the next one. Right, then, let's go. After we sobered up as well, we fucking...
Jackie Mullins again?
We flew, for an hour, we were in Jamaica. We were over Haas. We've been selling these sort of budget hotel chains, middle of the mid-scale, which is a Novotel, Holiday Inn, Budget, Travelodge, Irish Maldron Hotels in Ireland. We took on Jamaica then, big one, luxury, United Arab Emirates, flew out to Dubai. And again, we're up against a couple of strong competitors. Long story short again, closed Jamaica, won the Jamaica deal. Again, mindset, never say never. It was a bit of negotiating. They're Emirati, so they like, that's their culture, they negotiate and haggle. Yeah. They kept me and Liam in their boardroom for about 8 hours while they went for lunch, they went for smoke breaks, they went for water breaks. They tried, it was like, you know, wearing of two of us down. But then we were like,
two Irish boys.
Can you just sign the fucking, we don't care anymore, just sign it. But we got it signed, and long story short, we went down there up, we were in Jamaica, we went to Atlantis, the Palm, the next day to Saffron, got smashed, flew home. The next day we missed our flight, and then we got to the airport, and then Liam's like, you know what, fuck it, we're upgrading the business class. He's managing director, so we up with BA business class, and we're still pissed out of our mind at the airport. But it was, and he was like, I'm getting this, no sweat, I had a brilliant job yesterday, and I thought, right, then brilliant. We get to freaking London, he's like, there's a headache and sobering up, he's like,
oh, what are we doing?
I know I said I would get this, but I haven't even looked to see how much that flight was, but I might need to come back here next week. And I'm sort of like, oh, for fuck's sake, you know what I mean?
Classic. So how not they ruin a sale?
How not they ruin, that sale leaves a bitter taste in my mouth, cost me freaking more than a fucking maid office for an airfare home.
Brilliant.
But that is like coming from someone that was operating Seagate, which is how if that's your thing. And I've worked in factories. I was a window cleaner for a long time. I've done a lot of things. But they go from that, even the ability to fly business class, they go into all these places, they're fighting against all these big companies. Like, that's some transition they make, and that does take a lot of belief. But what I would like to say to anyone that's listening and thinking about going into sales, or even think that they could have the gift of the gab or whatever it takes to be like, you can do it. It can be done by two people from Derry, fighting against, I suppose, one of the biggest companies in the world, Google.
Like you say, like, gift of gab. But if you've got the gift of gab and you don't know what you're talking about,
that's true. It's not going to work out there. But just having belief, like, I always, even we were speaking to Kyle in the last podcast, talking about, you maybe do the people in Derry have that belief in themselves that they can be something big or something better, like, and I suppose you already hit the nail on the head with the mindset stuff. It's huge,
no? And no, that's a cultural thing,
A cultural thing, and I mean, it's becoming more mainstream now, mindset, and it's being accepted more, like, not mindset, but working on yourself, asking yourself the right questions, having belief, visualizing stuff, you know, and it's much bigger than what it was.
Mindset was 80% of it. Yeah. Obviously, we could talk, and we learned, we studied books and studied sales. I've read a sales book every month. There's a different one coming out, or a different author, a different strategy. But also, mindset, one thing that I learned in mindset, and it's probably good for small businesses that are probably thriving or working in a highly competitive environment. I know everybody likes to compete, but when some people were saying, Jesus, you're up against Google, it was like, so what? Don't care. They're Google, they're brilliant, they're great, they're phenomenal. I'm not saying it was a competitor, it'd be good to collaborate, but it was shifting from a competitive mindset to a more collaborative. Google have their thing, we've got our thing, and it's just, if we do our job right, if we can plan, I mean, we're going to miss 100% of the shots we don't take. So they just get at it. And I say that to the boxers, and, you know, I'll probably say we've got our annual fight show, it's plugged for the Oak Leaf Boxing Show on Saturday night here. We've got our show in the Maldron, and it's something I always say in between rounds, you're going to miss 100% of the punches you don't throw in this fight. And it was the same with Google. When people were saying, you shouldn't be going for that, or there's too much resource, or it's going to cost us $100,000 in resources to put together the package to compete on it. We're like, so what? If we don't do it, we're not going to win it, and we have to have belief. But don't see it as Google, compete, yeah. compete. Yeah. Just let's do our thing
exactly.
really well.
Exactly.
And that's the same to small businesses. Do yeah. your thing. Don't worry about Foxy. Don't worry about Jimmy or Noel. Just do what you're doing very well. Look after your customers and have belief in your own product.
Yeah.
And the customers will come.
Yeah.
And the business will come.
We had a chat yesterday with a guy. We did a call, a gym owner as well, too. Mm. And it was the same thing. And we were asking him how he was getting on, etc. And what they thought, why his business kind of wasn't working. And it was the same thing. So it was all these different gyms have opened up all around me. And I'll just stop you. Right. That's not the reason. That's not the reason at all. Like, no, there's loads of gyms around us. We've one across the street from each other. Uh-huh. It's not the reason. The reason is because, one, you're not marketing yourself properly. Two, again, straight away, is how your mind's actually thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of people do fall in that trap, like where they think about, because there's competition. There's competition everywhere. If you look at competition, then you're going to fail because you're always worrying about what that competition is doing. And that's a massive shift to get somebody from that way of thinking. They go, right, look, don't be thinking about what everybody else is doing. What is it that you want? Where are you going? And when you focus on that, that's what's pulling you.
Focus the differentiators of the value that you bring as an individual. You're the world-leading expert on you.
Yeah,
you're the CEO of you. So you have to get that mindset into people. When people start to believe it, you can see a light going on in their head. There's the Success Principles coach that I'm doing now with the Jack Canfield Institute. They add to the sales experience and success, I guess, is now the sort of tying it in with the Jack. You mentioned Bob Proctor. He's Bob's sort of competitor, but they collaborate a lot. In fact, Bob's his mentor in real life. But one of the things they talk about there, one of the first principles, the 64 principles of success, the number one is called ERO. And it's when I was speaking to people, even in our own company, sometimes you have to have this word with yourself. You know, when you talk about competitors, the ERO model is event plus your response to that event equals the outcome. So everything that you're sitting on today is your response to an event that happened in your life back in the past.
Yeah.
If you're going to blame competitors and that's what put you out of business, it was your thinking to the competitor being there that put you out of business.
Exactly.
If you see a competitor opening up or a client or somebody doing something great online and your response, well, I can do that. That's brilliant. I'd steal that idea or I could put a different play in that. Your outcome's going to be completely different.
Exactly.
And it's the first principle of the 64 principles. Yeah. And I think it's fun. There's a science behind it that you could teach somebody. You know, you'd need an hour, half day, an hour at least just to go into the details on it. Some really good exercises to do on it. Well, I think it's hugely important.
Perception just, doesn't it, really? Like, how you're perceiving things that be going on around you. And again, it all comes back down to how that person's operating, not what they're thinking.
You know yourself, you meet somebody who could be in business. You can tell within 30 seconds that you're all right. You ever ask somebody, everything all right? You can just feel it coming from them straight away, whether it's energy or you've just got an intuition or something or a gut feeling. And when you say to them, are you all right? See when somebody's bubbly or bouncing around, you know straight away things are going
well. You don't have to ask him.
He's fucking high on life. He's doing well. Things are going good. But you can just feel when somebody's not, it's just not happening or there's something in the back of their mind. It comes across in their mood, the way they walk carry themselves, even their voice, and automatic. And if you're in sales or you're in business for yourself, guess who's going to see that?
Of course.
Your customers, your clients, or your prospects that you're trying to sell to.
Exactly.
And I don't want to give somebody money that I think is
doesn't believe in themselves.
Doesn't believe in themselves. You know what I mean? I'm not going to invest in that person or that service.
We talked on it. I think we actually messaged it. Was we were in the car, and that's what I said. No, what's the difference between a good personal trainer and a not so good personal trainer, or a good business and it? And it's belief. Nine times out of ten, all right. There's obviously guys out there are more knowledgeable than that, but again, it'll come down to how that guy believes in themselves.
This is the kind of conversations we have in the car.
Well, when you're not calling me, you called me darling yesterday, by the way.
Called you what? Darling.
You called me love.
This is getting worse.
I should leave, should I?
Maybe so.
That's a wrap. It comes down to like what a person's belief is in themselves. Like at the end of the day, if they're not totally believing in what they feel about themselves or what their product is, then of course it's going to show.
Like sales now is you said it's evolved. You kind of are right, especially from social media. Like a lot of selling's been done on there now. I don't know. Obviously, the fundamentals probably don't change a lot, but people do get bombarded now with sales. Like, I don't have to even run a business to try and sell something now. I can just go on and plug it on social media if I want.
Yeah.
Like, how would you say that's kind of landscaped the whole selling thing? And is there any tips that you could give out even for people that do want to improve their sales on social media? And I know we've been talking throughout this about improvements people can make, but anything that stands out for you or any mistakes you see being made?
Well, we're looking at social media now for Station B&B, for example. Aye. It's doing all right without it, but we're now going to ramp up our social media. But when we sat down, what is our social media strategy now? Are we going to bombard? Who are we looking to target? What platform?
Yeah.
How's that platform going to evolve? Aye. If we're targeting, is it millennials? Is it Facebooks? Is it pictures? Somebody stayed in the B&B and said, this is an Instagram-ready property. It's phenomenal. Some American dude was snapping all over the place and they're all taking pictures. And that was never our, we're going, oh, Instagram-ready. There's a murder, there's a pitch, there's a play. Because people are just so, understanding what platform. Having a social media, now we're sitting down next week with the manager that runs the two properties, and we're going to map out what the social media strategy, what content are we going to post out, what's the call. I see so many stuff in Facebook and there's no call to action on it. It's just spray and pray. Spray out and pray that somebody engages, and then if you're going to spend 2 or 3 hours a week of your time or whatever time spent on social media, you want a freaking return on it. And a lot of people don't have a return on it, and yes, via a social media plan. So me and Liam come from that background where everything's kind of strategized and planned out. It's probably not been a bad learning, all the different CEOs we've reported under. So when we're going to do it ourselves, even if it's a one page freaking document, when I say a plan, it's not a freaking book.
No,
it's just a freaking, here's our goal, here's how we're going to measure, here's the midterm, the short term, the next 60 days or whatever it might be, here's a midterm, here's where we want to be in a year. And our goal is going to be quite unique. Well, we want to drive direct bookings to our business. We don't want to pay booking.com 15%. Yeah. At the minute, we're sucking booking.com up because we're just getting going.
Aye.
The goal now in social media strategy is we're going to put good content. We're going to have a call to action. We're going to engage people. And make people, when they see it, maybe, and we're looking at videos as well, we know, because video has the highest ROI,
making that brand more aware,
and make the brand more aware, and we want to redress the balance and be one of the only properties potentially in Northern Ireland in the B&B luxury B&B space that has 80% of its business coming direct, as opposed to the way it is at the moment. 80% of the business comes through Expedia or hotel.
I suppose that comes down to even understanding where, like, when you're using social media, where your customer is, and understanding who your customer is first, and like using that platform. It's
exactly
certainly having some sort of plan. Certainly, that's the first thing.
Plan and consistent. Plan and consistent and persistent as well.
Persistent.
Being persistent, following through in your plan, tweaking it if it doesn't work. You're not seeing the engagement. If you have a plan, how are you managing it then? So how do you measure results? Is it weekly? The other thing which frustrates me in social media, sort of not when I sign up to something or click on something or give my friggin' email or give my phone number, they don't follow up. No. There's been a load of stuff that I've asked, white papers or reports or a free ebook or whatever it is, and I've gone down at the top end of the funnel and I'm there to buy. I give my details. Call me. I'm a sales guy. I'll buy it because salespeople tend to buy. A lot easier. And there's nothing more frustrating. And there's people that I know, and I'll not name anybody that is marketing themselves on social media, and they're going, hey, I had freaking 10 leads to follow, but I haven't followed. And then you're thinking, does this come back to sales then? Are they afraid to pick up the freaking phone?
And that could be the exact answer that is.
Yeah.
That's what the problem is.
Why did they not phone me? And then maybe that's something that in a webinar and a half day, I could show you a very simple 30-second script that'll give you the confidence to pick up the phone. But more importantly, it'll get you somebody, it'll have the person teased, seize and please. You'll have them teased first, then seize them, then please them with the offer. And it's really, really simple, straightforward stuff.
Brilliant, man.
Brilliant.
Excellent. As I say, it's been great having you on, Christy. And
Thank you, guys.
Just mention now the seminar. We're planning to do a seminar with Christy in the Millennium Forum.
May. Start of May.
Probably start of May now for this. Details will obviously be coming out on the Elevate page. And this will be open up to small businesses and obviously our guys in Elevate who will take a lot from it.
Excellent.
Aye, so great having you on board, and as
I say,
took a lot away from that for us. Even going over things that we maybe potentially knew before, but took a lot from it, and hopefully the listeners have took a lot of value from it as well.
Excellent, cheers, Christy.
Thank you, boys. Enjoy that.
Super. Elevate.